Things get better, but they never get good. They never get good. Don't do anything I say I would. That's this mystery band. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Things got a little better for the Blue Jays on Sunday with a pitching and defense fueled victory to salvage one game of a series against the Los Angeles Dodgers and break a 5-game losing streak. But there's not much you'd call good right now, as the Blue Jays are on a franchise record tying 20-game streak without scoring 6 or more runs. Now, they're 10-10 in that stretch. Don't think you're going to feel particularly good about that when every day you're watching a team score 5 or fewer. It is also the worst month, if we include the little bit of March there, and the month isn't over yet, so they've got 2 days to pad these stats. It is the worst slugging percentage that the team has had over a month since, and get this, September 2016. So obviously these things can end okay. That team still hung on to a wild card spot, won a very fun wild card game, but the writing was on the wall about their ability to go deep in the playoffs there when the slugging dried up. The slugging didn't dry up for this Blue Jays team because it just hasn't been there since the very beginning. They are in a rough spot, 359 slugging as a team. They are in 27th in Major League Baseball in runs per game. And again, 20 in a row without scoring at least 6. That has only happened one other time in franchise history. Let's talk about it. They did get a win yesterday, so they snapped a 5-game losing streak. That's a baby positive there. Huge positive is that Ben Nicholson-Smith is in studio with us for the hour today. Ben, what's going on, man? How are you?
Blake, it's good to be here. Not a lot going on, but we've got some stuff to dissect with this Blue Jays offense, I think.
Yeah, there was a lot of negative to dissect. It was, like, weirdly a very fun weekend down at the park. Like, I was down there Friday and Saturday. I know you were there Sunday. Friday was kind of the Shohei show, which, if anyone blanked it out of their memory, the Jays lost 12-2 on Friday, and Shohei Ohtani hit a first-inning home run that was the safest bet that's ever been on any board of bets ever. But look, the Shohei stuff was fun. Addison Barger being up was fun. Had a fun conversation with him on Saturday down at the park. He comes out, his walk-up music is System of a Down, which is something that I would have listened to in high school. And I was talking to him about it. He's like, yeah, I'm really into old music. And my heart just broke a little bit.
Right.
What did you make of the Shohei show before we get into some of the Jays specifics? I know you were down there yesterday.
Yeah, it's always fun watching Shohei Ohtani. To me, he is like the most compelling athlete in the sport. I don't think that's going out on a limb at all. Even at a time that he's not pitching, he's just so fun to watch. He's so good. Even yesterday, he takes an offer, but that first at bat hits one so deep to center field, basically has to force Dalton Varsho into making an incredible catch, barreling into the wall. But Shohei is so fun to watch. So I think that, you know, it was a necessary moment for fans to basically have their voice heard and let Shohei Ohtani know that they were displeased.
Now, in your mind, so I talked to Jack Harris of the Los Angeles Times about this. He was here and writing about that. To me, that seemed like, I don't want to speak for everyone. To me, that felt like it wasn't really like booing Shohei that much as like he's a proxy for like you whiffed on Shohei and we're really unhappy generally. Right. And like Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro or whoever you want to target it at. Like, if you remember the home opener, like, John Schneider got booed when he took Jose Berríos out of the game. And that was a perfectly reasonable time to take Jose Berríos out of the game. But it was like, hey, we never got the chance last year. That's kind of what I think the Shohei thing was. It was like, there's nobody else that we can express this to. So you're going to be the proxy for that.
I think there's a big element of that for sure. I think there's also an element of like, hey, you know, you didn't choose us. You chose the Dodgers. So we're not happy about that, which is totally understandable. Now, Shohei's right to choose whatever team he wants. The Dodgers are a great choice. I would say, hate to say it, probably a better choice than any other team, including the Blue Jays.
It's got to be nice for Shohei to be only the second best hitter in his own lineup as he puts up generational stats.
It's outrageous. Like, they're so good. The Dodgers are such a good team. And I know no one wants to hear that. But, you know, that was a moment right there. And then, of course, he responds and hits that home run off of Chris Bassett. So really cool, you know, less so for the Blue Jays, but a cool moment for, you know, baseball on the weekend.
Fun, I'd imagine. I didn't speak to him after the game, but fun, I'd imagine, on Saturday for Yusei Kikuchi as well. We know he gets up for those battles. They had 3 really good battles. It is the hardest Yusei Kikuchi has thrown a ball with regularity in any game in his major league career, except 2021 when he pitched against the Blue Jays, which maybe sold the Jays on him. I don't know. I don't know why he was so geeked up for that one. But otherwise, it was like he threw Shohei like 6 of the hardest pitches he's ever thrown. Shohei managed a very loud ground out a single that was the hardest hit ball of Shohei Ohtani's career.
Yeah.
And then there was that really cool Shohei's helmet falls off, swinging and missing at a curveball to get the strikeout.
Well, and Yusei Kikuchi, as I'm sure you've looked at these numbers yourself, Blake, but Yusei Kikuchi's fastball is one of the best fastballs in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at By Stuff Plus, if you look at just like the results, and of course, watching it out of his hand, the way he's getting it in on right-handed hitters this year, he's doing a great job with that pitch. So, you know, Kikuchi, to me, third year into this Blue Jays tenure, what an important player for this team. One that you'd obviously want to keep around as long as you can, but he's on the brink of free agency and doing great things for this team.
So you mentioned the partial catch on Shohei Sunday, and I agree with you on Kikuchi. Kevin Gausman with a nice start yesterday as well. Got some help from the defense. Couple nice plays from Alejandro Kirk early on. He also had three hits, including a homer, which yep. was not even just nice to see, just like you were headed for not like being purely Danny Jansen's backup. He needed that game big time. We could talk more about the offensive decisions the team has to make throughout the lineup, but the Varsho catch, a really nice George Springer catch, some nice Alejandro Kirk plays, Kevin Gausman pitch as well. And then there's this big moment where I'm not a big believer in momentum in baseball, right? Like the old saying, momentum is as good as your next day's starting pitcher. So, and we've been through this too many times with the Jays the last couple years to think that eking out that win against the Dodgers is going to change much.
Yeah.
If you were to believe in that, though, Jimmy Garcia having runners on second and third with nobody out and facing Shohei Ohtani and getting out of the Tim Mesa gave him an assist there as well. But then getting out of a runners on second and third, nobody out, and Shohei's up with a 2-run lead situation. Felt if the team were playing better right now, that would have felt like a really big moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Jimmy Garcia has just been incredible for this team all season long. And yesterday, I mean, I don't know if you want to get into this, but there was a case to be made for leaving Jimmy Garcia on the mound against Max Muncy, the left-handed hitter, instead of bringing in Tim Mesa. Jimmy Garcia was at 20 pitches, showing good velocity, a lot of 95s, some 98s. And the Jays went with Mesa, and I guess it worked. I mean, Mesa hung a slider that Muncy missed, and Muncy would later connect and send one all the way to the wall that Varsho had to make another really good play on. I wouldn't say that necessarily worked that well. Just, don't know. I didn't like that move. I didn't like that move at all. I just think that when you look at the splits on Muncy, he is almost as good for his career against lefties as he is against righties. And I just think Jimmy Garcia is a better pitcher, but the Jays got away with it. They win the game. That's what counts.
Yeah, and Jimmy Garcia, look, with most pitchers, you're not going to be split neutral for long or reverse splits for long if you ever show it, but he has been as tough on lefties this year and last as he has been on righties, and part of that is he has six different pitches that
he can
go to. He can mix it up both ways, right? You know, a lot of the times with a righty reliever, why you want to protect the lefty matchup is like, well, those guys throw a lot of sliders, right? Like a lot of guys come in, it's fastball, slider. Slider's got big platoon splits the way it breaks in. But Jimmy Garcia can mix it up. He can go to the sinker. He can go to the curveball. He's got obviously a very, very good fastball now with career best velocity.
Yeah. To me, Jimmy Garcia is like emerging right now. And who knows how long this lasts? Like this could fade in 3 weeks. But
a relief pitcher being volatile?
Yeah. At this moment, I think Jimmy Garcia is like the best Blue Jays reliever we've seen in years. He's one of the top 10 relievers in Major League Baseball right now. He looks like a guy who could get huge outs in the playoffs, but the Jays don't look like a playoff team, so that's the problem.
Yeah, Jimmy Garcia, by the way, the stats now on the season, 0.68 ERA, 16 strikeouts in 13 and a third innings, and a 99th percentile chase rate. He is getting players to swing at pitches outside of the zone at almost a league best rate.
That two-seamer in on Teoscar Hernandez to get him to strike out, just nasty. Like, everyone's thinking slider off the plate to Teo, right? We've seen that so many times. And he just goes two-seamer in. Incredible.
It was nice to see Teo this weekend, too. Our pal Lindsey Dunn getting the seed treatment from him at one point. And, just good to see him around. Speaking of relief pitching, Jordan Romano picked up his 101st save in that one, passing Billy Koch for fourth all-time in franchise history. So, look, we're talking about a lot of good defense that went in this game, a lot of big relief pitching moments, and a good Kevin Gausman start, and the Blue Jays still barely eked it out. Why is that? It's because this team can't hit. So, nice win yesterday aside, let's take a look at where this offense is, because that snapped a five-game losing streak that was almost entirely the fault of the offense. The pitchers have continued to mostly do their job. Friday aside, that was a tough Chris Bassett one, and then a pseudo bullpen day against the Dodgers. But for the most part, this has been a team that's done a decent job preventing runs. Minor miracle that they're only a game under 500, given that they're 27th in runs per game right now. Big negative run differential as well. And they have gone 10-10 during this stretch of 20 games where they've not scored six runs or more. I know that's like a bit of an arbitrary cutoff, and people are maybe tiring of the six plus runs and what happens. But 20 games without doing that is long. It ties a franchise record right now. And again, I mentioned off the top, a 359 slugging percentage so far this year. The Jays are 23rd in the league in slugging percentage, 24th in home runs, 19th in on-base percentage. There's really not a lot going on there that they're doing well. Where do we start here?
Just the importance of it. It's half the game, right? So if half the game is scoring runs, you're not good at that half of the game, you're not going to be a good team. So that has to change, or they're going to have a bad season. So it's very simple. That's pretty obvious, I think. You need to see more from Vlad and from Bo and from Springer. Those guys are going to be huge parts of the offense, and they have not shown enough this year. So I just think at this point too, people tend to look outside, right? Whether it's prospects like Aurelvis Martinez or Addison Barger, or maybe it's trades. Could they go out and get someone? But to me, the more I've contemplated those two alternatives, the more you realize like it's really hard to do. It's really, really hard to have a prospect come up, and it's hard to make a trade until July. And even then, who's going to be out there? So, is Lane Thomas going to turn this team around? It has to come from within. And this is where, you look back at the offseason, that was when you actually had the chance to make additions. They didn't do enough in the offseason. Now they're paying the price.
Yeah, that's tough. And, again, to go back to the Shohei note, I did feel a sense of, this is a booing Shohei because he didn't pick here. But also, the plan B, you and I sat here at the end of the season and we did at the letters about what the offseason could look like.
Right.
And it was pretty modest given the free agent class and things like that. And then everyone's expectations went up to Shohei levels. And then when Shohei went away, we sat there and we were like, what does the offseason look like? And that initial plan was still there. None of those guys had signed anywhere. And then what actually happened was, and I like this guy as a person, he's a utility piece, but Isaiah Kiner-Falefa can't be your biggest offensive signing on a team that already was struggling with offense.
Well, here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or with Justin Turner or with Kevin Kiermaier in isolation, right? Those are good players. They're major league players. You want them on your team. It's just they could have also used a Willy Adames, They could have used one more bat to go out there and just deepen things. And I understand the Brewers are trying to compete. It's hard to get good players away from major league teams. But, at a certain point, that's the job of a GM, is to get creative, to find ways to get those deals across the finish line and make sure you have that offensive depth. But to this point, they made a bet on internal guys who have not made that bounce back.
Yeah, it's tough, and obviously things have played out a certain way, but how good would Juan Moncada look on the IL right now for the Blue Jays?
he was never on my list.
He was on my list because any port in a storm when it comes to the offense. So you made the point about prospects, right? And I'm sure we've both been asked a lot about when's Aurelvis coming up. He has these monster AAA numbers. We saw Addison Barger got the call. He has had some loud contact. Nothing's really dropped in for him yet. There's going to be some swing and miss there as well. Now, Aurelvis doesn't have his path to playing time, as a second baseman, as purely an infielder, requires some, hey, someone else has got to go to left field, which is fine. Addison Barger had never played left field before until the other day, at any point in his career. So you can get creative with that. But the reality is is Aurelvis Martinez going to come up and play in place of Bo Bichette? No. Is Addison Barger going to come up and play in place of George Springer full-time? No. Is Spencer Horwitz going to come up and play in place of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? No. You can improve at the margins. Hey, I don't think IKF's going to hit. I would like a few more of those plate appearances to go to an Aurelvis type. Hey, Cavan's bat has been there's a lot of strikeout there right now. I would like some of those plate appearances to go to Aurelvis or Addison Barger, whatever. You can do that, but no prospect is coming up. No trade is happening in April that will remedy the fact that the first three hitters in your lineup are posting an on-base plus slugging, an OPS right now, of 654, 659, and 568. And that's George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Bo Bichette, respectively.
Yeah, and wow, that's so bad.
It is.
A month into the season, that is just not anywhere close to good enough. So, that improvement has to come from those guys. I think as much as we can sit here and say, yes, the Blue Jays should have added more in the offseason, and push something past the finish line there. They also, it would have been a reasonable expectation to think that Bo Bichette's going to hit.
Yes.
You know, and that Vlad Jr. has way more than he's showing here. Now, I still think that, you know, it's probably reasonable to kind of gradually lower expectations for Vlad Jr., but certainly he's going to be an above average hitter. And he just hasn't been that so far.
Yeah, he hasn't. And this is, you know, arguably the second worst stretch of his career. So he had some, this is a 29-game span here to start the year, right? He had a couple of like 25 and 30-game stretches as a rookie where he didn't hit all that well, but that's fine. He was a rookie. He was first coming up. In 2022, he had three kind of multi-week stretches where he was struggling at this level, but he had started the season so well and the hot stretches were so hot that his OPS never actually dipped below 775 that entire season. So you can deal with it a little bit more. Like when a guy's on a cold streak and it's like, oh, his 825 became a 775, you can live with that a little more. And then there was one last year from May 5th to June 21st last year. It was a 41-game stretch where he had a 632 OPS.
Yeah.
He's at 659 right now. So this is basically, other than early May to late June last year, which if you remember, the Oakland A's came into town and Vlad hit his first home run at home all season.
Mm-hmm.
And it was late June. And it was off Oakland in a game that they lost. It was Forbidden Door weekend, which obviously is what everyone remembers, that a huge wrestling weekend in the city. But yeah, this is like statistically, and we can give him some patience with the rookie year stuff. This is the second worst stretch of his career, and the worst stretch was like within the last calendar year.
Well, let's also throw in some context around those offensive numbers too, because he also got picked off yesterday at first base. Totally unnecessary. I don't have to spell this out for people. He's not a base stealer. You don't need to do that. Then you look at the defense.
The error the other night.
Right. Like, that's in Kansas City. You're playing these close games. You're not scoring all kinds of runs. And that is, I'm sorry, that's an easy play. Like, there's no nuance to it. That's just an easy play. And he messed it up, and it cost his team a win. So you don't have the defense. You don't have the base running. You don't have the offense. And with Bo and with Vlad, we all know they're now, you know, a year and a half away from free agency. So you start to look at their tenure and so much promise that they delivered, and they still haven't won a playoff game, and there's certainly no promise of that ending anytime soon. Now, it's not out of the question. A lot of teams make the playoffs. It's easy to make the playoffs in baseball now, as easy as it's ever been in Major League history. So the Jays are not closed off from that possibility, but they've got to get some stuff on track, and it really starts with Vladdy and Bo.
It does. And if you look, George Springer is older. He is, like, maybe he's not a guy. He's certainly not going to OPS 654 for the year, right? Like, he's going to be better than that. The approach is still solid enough. He's started to look a little bit better over the last week or so. That'll come up. But George Springer's maybe a guy that you got to be realistic about at age 34. He's not getting back to 800 OPS George Springer. And that can be fine. Like, when you sign that six-year deal, you know that the back end of that might not be as good as the front end. I think he'll be better. With Vlad and Bo, like, the three of them together have been basically replacement level statistically this year, which for the top three guys in your order just can't. And I know this all sounds so obvious. It's like, yeah, your best three players can't be replacement level, but it really is, you know, you can be that reductive about it with this offense. The top three, and you can't, it's not like you're going to move your 1-2-3 hitter to 6-7-8 and that's going to resolve anything. They just, like, straight up, they have to hit better.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you can shuffle this around a bit. I'm of the opinion anyway that that's not an insult to players to move them around.
Try something.
Yeah, they've had a month. I personally have no problem with that. Now, I understand there are other arguments. There are people in the organization who don't want to disrupt things, who want to show faith in the players. Okay. That's one approach to it. Wouldn't be mine. I just think that, you know, when the Yankees move Gleyber Torres off leadoff, it's not an insult.
Right.
It's just getting the best production that you can.
Yeah, but the Yankees also have Aaron Judge that they can plug in there. So that's
right. Or Volpe.
Yeah.
Who, you know, the Jays don't have that player who's just breaking out. I mean, I guess Varsho, who you can bump up maybe to clean up against righties. But
so that's the thing. And like, Varsho's a guy you would want to bump up to the high middle of the order, like the heart of the order, not to the top of the order. Because he's a 320 OBP guy, and he's like, his value is power fueled, yeah. right? The only guy on the team right now that has a good on-base percentage is Justin Turner.
Yeah.
And again, do you want to put him up in the one spot? Like, I wouldn't hate it given the approach and the good at-bats. Like, I used to advocate for Russell Martin leading off on those 2015 teams. I like a high OBP guy there. But they'd probably tell you he's one of our only guys who can hit for extra bases right now. We want that in the middle of the order.
Yeah, I'd be fine with Turner leading off.
Yeah.
I'd be totally fine with that. And then you go, you know, Vladdy, Bo, you know, maybe it's Varsho, Springer. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you're facing a lefty, maybe it is Springer cleanup. You can mix things around. Maybe it's Davis Schneider cleanup.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's, he's been pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's been harder to strike out. We have a piece at sportsnet.ca today by Nick Ashbourne kind of outlining the ways that Davis Schneider's actually been really, really tough to retire with two strikes. So, you know, that could be it. But end of the day, you need your big guys to get going.
Yeah. When it comes to Vlad and Bo. So I had maintained for a little while here that I thought Bo looked closer. You know, you see it at the plate and there are good swings and the approach is, you know, not that far off of where he normally is. Whereas Vlad, it seems like a lot of things are not working right now. Like, it does, you know, you talk to people around the team too, and it seems like there are a handful of things that he's trying to fix at the same time, which we know over the history of baseball is like, you can focus on one or two things at a time. You can't focus on all of them. But Bo is also, like, only got one hit last week.
Yeah.
It's tough. How do you, like, do you get a sense that either of them might be closer to figuring this out than the other?
I never think Bo is far away. I think he's just such a good hitter when it comes to that hit tool. And I think he knows who he is as a hitter. So if I had to guess who the top hitter for average would be in the American League this week, like, Bo Bichette's toward the top of the list. I don't really overcomplicate it. I think with Vladdy, I'm not going to try to get into hitting mechanics. That's not my expertise, but I just look at the numbers, right? And it kind of tells you a story after a month. It's just not good.
Yeah.
So I don't know when that changes or how. I think he's better than this. We've seen him be better than this, but it's not great.
And to your point earlier is, you know, with more of these stretches, with the more this stretch sustains, again, no one's going to say Vlad is not a good hitter anymore and he can't get back to that level. But the more data you have, the more information you have that tells you he's, you know, look, when you have a bad month, it doesn't mean you're bad, but it is a little extra evidence that maybe you're not great. Maybe you're just good.
Yeah.
And those lows are lower and the highs might not be as high when you figure it out.
And that's where, you know, to go bigger picture here than this one month. Okay. You know, Vlad Jr. We've thought about for so long. It's like the core of this team. Maybe he's a good player on a team that's still trying to find himself, or a good but not great player. Maybe it's okay if you just play this out. You know, it doesn't have to be a trade, because let's face it, the guy, he does not have trade value right now. No. So it's not a trade. It's not an extension right now. You just have to play it out and hope that it turns around, and you have to surround him with more too, because you need depth to an offense. If Vladdy doesn't have a 7.5 WAR season, or ceiling, I should say, which I don't know if he does at this point. You know, that's
he does not. Let me just tell you,
right? And we thought that he did. So if he doesn't have that, you have to get that WAR from somewhere else. You have to get that production from somewhere else, and it's got to come from down in the lineup. You have to have a balanced approach.
Yeah, and it's tough. And you know, Bo has the potential to be, you know, a 5-win guy as well, given that he plays shortstop, runs the bases a little better, but he is nowhere near that. Like, he's been below replacement level based on those wins above replacement metrics so far this year. So This takes me to a complicated question that I should probably save for a longer conversation come July time. But let's say things progress like this. They continue to hover around 500. The pitching's really good. The defense is elite. The offense is maybe not this bad. Please, mercifully, not this bad. I don't want to talk about the offense this bad for 6 months.
Yeah.
But they're just not that good. They're a 500-ish team that prevents runs really well and can't score them very well. How does that, like, we... Coming into this year, I felt very urgent. I felt the front office should be urgent. The window is not super wide open because Vlad and Bo are closer to free agency. A lot of the good free agent contracts you signed are for guys who are now in their 30s. And, you know, either those contracts are coming up or you don't know how long one of these guys is going to stay particularly effective into their 30s. That's both on the position player side and the pitcher side. How do you think that might change their aggression in terms of, like, I have a hard time imagining them being sellers at the trade deadline, no matter what's happening. But that buy versus, like, let's just ride it out decision.
Yeah, I mean, they could be sellers.
I think things would have to get a lot worse, right?
Yeah. If they're, let's say they're 100 games in at the deadline, right? If they're 47-52, okay. I think they sell.
And you're like 7-8 games back?
Yeah. I think they would sell. And I think Jimmy Garcia would be the top reliever available. And I think Yusei Kikuchi would be the top starting pitcher available. And I think at that point, that is a tough pivot. And that is, organizationally, there is a lot going on there, right? There are
you're
a lot of questions.
You're going to tell me the team's bad and you're taking Kikuchi away from me? That's
Well, look, I'm just playing out different scenarios here. There, so that's like the, that's a bad case scenario we can all acknowledge. I think it's on the table. I think there's a, okay. I don't know, 10% chance of that. There's also a chance where they're adding, where they get it on track, where Vladdy becomes somewhere closer to what he should be, where Kirk continues building on what he showed yesterday. You've got, you know, a really good 1-5, a playoff caliber pitching staff. You start rolling and then you get to July. Now you're over 500. You're looking at the wild card, maybe even hoping for the East. Okay, great. In that scenario, well, you're looking for a position player who can help your offense, right? Because this is not a great offense, even if they get things on track. So you're probably looking at someone who can play second and or third. You know, is that a Ryan McMahon?
I knew you were going Ryan McMahon.
And he's, I've heard that he's really hard to get. Like, the Rockies don't want to trade him. That's going to be a really, really tough one to pull off. But, you know,
sure.
So
when you're 7-21, you got to hang on to your guys.
The Rockies are a different kind of team, right? You know, so I don't know who that is. You could look at outfield too, right? You could put Kiermaier on the bench. You could put Varsho in center. So is that a Brent Rooker? Is that a Lane Thomas? I don't think that's going to turn your whole offense around, but. That's kind of, and then you try to add a reliever. So cornerback reliever. That's Tommy Pham, maybe. You know, we talk about him all the time. Yeah. So
just signed a minor league deal the other day
with the White Sox, right? So, you know, that's the one scenario. I don't see them acquiring a mega player at the deadline. I just don't.
I mean, also, I like, who would the guy be, right? Like the bad teams don't have players like that. And if they do, they're caught, they're controllable.
In theory, it could be Bregman, right?
Sure.
But A, he's got to get on track, which he's been abysmal so far. And then B, you have to persuade the Astros to trade like a Hall of Famer. And is Ross Atkins going to give the Astros what they want?
And then you have to think, well, are you going to re-sign him in the offseason? Because are you paying a rental price?
It's a rental.
That kind of thing. And then the Astros could also, like, they're 9-19 right now. But, like, there's a scenario they end up in the Jays spot as well, where they're like hovering around 500 and trying to make that decision.
Exactly. And so I don't think you want to be in a hold. Like, the worst case scenario for the Jays this year in a lot of ways is they do like a middling buy and then they win 83 games and they miss the playoffs, right? Because then you've missed everything.
So basically they repeat the last couple of years, but just come up just outside instead of just inside.
I think there's at least if you get in, you roll the dice.
Yes.
And you know, obviously we know the last couple of years have been as bad as it gets for playoff performance and playoff execution and all that. But at least getting in with this pitching staff, I know no one wants to hear it, but if you get in with this pitching staff, that's a really good pitching staff.
Yeah, you're shortening series, you're shortening games. This is how this team's built to win.
Yeah.
We saw it yesterday with a 3-1 win where they got pitching and defense, and that was enough.
It just doesn't look like they have enough bats to get
They do not. So go get Mike Trout. And then everything's solved. That's a right-handed hitting outfielder for you that would... I don't know. Could you just eat the salary at this point? Would he accept the trade? I don't know. He's hitting really well. He's back to being Mike Trout, almost.
Start the rumors now.
Yeah, I will. Look, I can't do a second offseason. I like Lane Thomas a lot, but I feel like I'm doing a bit too much if I do two consecutive trade deadlines where I really want Lane Thomas.
That's like me. That's how I feel with Ahmed Rosario, who has been amazing, by the way.
Yes, and much cheaper than the other option in that spot.
I'll just leave that there.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break because we've gotten to the they should trade for Mike Trout portion of the of the segment. When we come back, we'll look ahead to this Kansas City Royals series. It's a team we just saw, but they've got a new pitcher, Jonathan Boland, coming up tonight to face Yariel Rodriguez. It's also Danny Jansen glasses giveaway night. We'll kick around some of our favorite giveaway nights in Blue Jays history. I also want to go back and look at the other Blue Jays team that went 20 consecutive games without scoring 6 runs because that team didn't make the playoffs either, but it was a pretty good team, and I just want to mine around it and be like, hey, you know what? If you're a team built on really, really good pitching, you can survive a 20-game stretch like this and figure it out. Ben Nicholson-Smith staying with us as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy, Ben Nicholson-Smith of At The Letters of Sportsnet.ca. Still alongside me, some lineup changes for you tonight, not for the Toronto Blue Jays, but for us here on Sportsnet. If you're watching the game, it's 7:07, first pitch will be Jonathan Bolin against Yariel Rodriguez. If you're watching on TV, it'll be Ben Schulman, Joe Siddle, and Arden Zwelling on the broadcast, mixing it up a little bit. Jamie and Caleb for you with Blue Jays Central, and Eric Smith with Chris LaRue on the radio side. So it'll sound, whether you're on TV or radio, like a little bit of a different series. Maybe this is the mix-up that gets the Jays offense going. I'm not sure. Ben Nicholson-Smith still with me. How are we feeling, man?
Good.
Your mic is off. There we go.
Feeling good. Looking up Jonathan Bolin. What do you know about him?
Okay, so I know that he had Tommy John. So he was like a good prospect before, and the velocity took like a really long time to come back. So it's not all the way back now. Like, he was a guy who at one point hit 97. Now he's like 94, 95. Big sinker and a slider and curveball combo that grade out pretty well by Stuff Plus. A changeup he throws a lot that does not grade out well, and that like the scouting people have never really liked. So yeah. I'm not sure why he hasn't shelved it yet. I don't know. He has the profile of a guy who, like, he's been in the Royal system since 2018 at this point. Like, this guy is eventually going to end up as a middle reliever, yeah, not a starting prospect, but he's off to a nice little start at AAA.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at the Royals overall, and the big difference for them this year compared to, you know, last summer is just the pitching overall. Yeah. Reagan's obviously leading that way, but Stinger's taken steps forward. You look at Seth Lugo, how good he's been. Walker's probably more of just a guy, but he's someone to have there to round things out. So their pitching really looks better. Like, this is a group that can kind of hold its own.
And they've got Jordan Lyles around as well. He's on the restricted list right now, or the temporary inactive list, but another guy who can eat some innings, yeah, for them as well. So the starters in this series, it's Jonathan Bolin against Yariel Rodriguez tonight, Cole Ragans against Jose Berríos tomorrow, and then Chris Bassitt against Seth Lugo on Wednesday, which is that's a pitcher's battle right there. The Bassitt and Lugo, like, we're just going to throw a bunch of stuff. That'll be a fun one. Yariel Rodriguez tonight, though. So we saw him struggle a little bit last time out. It was fine. But after the first two starts were so good, it was a little bit of a difference. You know, what we see now that we have a couple games to sample is the fastball is good. He throws it hard. It's, you know, a little deceptive, but he basically just challenges guys right down the middle with it. And opponents are hitting 353. Against it. What have you seen from Rodriguez? What are you looking for as, like, you know, as he figures out how to pitch at the major league level here?
Well, it's really adjusting to that routine of a starting pitcher too, because last time out when he went four innings against Kansas City, charged with three runs, he was on 4 days rest. That was the first time he was on 4 days rest as a Blue Jay. Previously, they had built in extra rest for him,
which would mean it's the first time he's been on 4 days rest probably since he was pitching in Cuba,
yeah,
because he was a late inning guy in Japan,
right, and didn't pitch at all last year. So you're looking at someone who is really, really getting reacclimated to that. Now tonight again will be on 4 days rest, so now, you know, do we see that stuff kind of more where it was against the Royals last week? Not necessarily in peak form, I don't know, but he's having to make those adjustments in real time. Certainly has the stuff to do it. I think he can give you four solid innings, and that's useful in the major leagues. But, you know, here's where it's interesting tonight, Blake, is you look at the Blue Jays bullpen, Jimmy Garcia's down, Jordan Romano's down. So, okay, your two best relievers are not available. Do you try to piece it together with, you know, Mesa, Pearson, Yenesis Cabrera, Trevor Richards, or is there a roster move to be made?
Brandon Little for Paolo Espino.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm the Jays today, that's a move that I make.
Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know Bowden or didn't catch it or doesn't remember, Bowden Francis was put on the IL last week. Brandon Little called up in his place. That was Wednesday now. You should probably know that by now. But Brandon Little, not a guy who, like, certainly, like, not a Bowden Francis who they're going to be like, yes, with certainty he can go two innings after Yariel. He's the last man in the bullpen, a third lefty. Like, he's there, no disrespect to him, because I know the Jays like stuff about him, and there's, you know, he didn't look that bad in his outing the other day, but he's in a mop-up role right now, and today's a day where they don't need a mop-up person. They need someone who can give them multiple innings of effective pitching behind Yariel. Now, Espino was not very good when he was in that mop-up role with the Blue Jays. He has not been great at AAA. He's been just kind of fine. He's walking a lot of batters, which is, you know, not something you can do if you're Paolo Espino. So I don't know, but the pitching depth has gotten thin in a hurry here.
Yeah, it has. And now they're down to 1 week with Manoah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have until
May 7th.
Week from today is I think the week today is the 6th. So kind of their window, essentially, to figure out whether they want to bring Manoah up or option him. And really, Manoah will make that decision for them with how he performs. He's slated to pitch tomorrow. So we'll see. He has to take some steps beyond where he's been so far.
He has not looked good at AAA. Like, there have been three starts. I've caught a chunk of all three of them. I'm not going to say I watched every single pitch, but there was even the game where he had good results. He got away with some stuff. He allowed a double, a single, and a home run in a first inning where he only ended up giving up two runs, and they gifted him one. He caught a guy way off second base and picked him off. He didn't record that out as a pitcher. It was really a freebie. Like, it was the Vlad at first base thing on Sunday. It was a freebie. And, you know, that was a game where at least he didn't walk anyone, but didn't get a ton of swing and miss. And then last time out, it was tough again. So, I mean, I think we're heading for him being optioned unless there's, like, the other thing is like, they could, if they were going to start him and move Yariel to the bullpen in a multi-inning role, like, I would understand it, even though Yariel's been better than that. But you're not doing the opposite. They're not going to use Alek Manoah out of the bullpen,
no,
I don't think.
No. Yeah, that's not going to happen. It's not something he's ever done. And, you know, frankly, I'm just not sure that the stuff is at that point, you know, where you're really confident in him in that role. So his best case scenario is definitely as a starting pitcher where he's hauling innings. But he's not close to that right now. So if his last start goes, or if his next start goes the way his last one did, you're talking about, I agree, an option to AAA. Keep him there as depth, and you keep rolling with Yariel as that number five.
Yeah, the other two pitchers at AAA who are on the 40-man, if you're looking at a move tonight, Hagen Danner's been solid, probably walking a few too many guys, but the ground ball rate's been really nice. He's doing a better job keeping in the park. And then Zach Pop's off to a nice start results-wise. But again, walking too many guys for one of these kind of, you know, low leverage reliever types. So
yeah, they need more pitching depth. I mean, this is the thing. Their actual major league starting pitching staff is great. Yeah. Like, it is really good. And not everyone has it's very rare to have a number five even that you're happy with. So they're in a good place, but yeah, it doesn't extend that deep into the minors.
Yeah. And I don't think you're reaching down to AA and rushing Adam Macko or anything like that.
Right. And Chad Dallas, who's part of that starting pitching depth equation, has been off to a bad start.
Yeah. And isn't on the 40 man. So you get into some complicating factors there. By the way, so some quick minor league updates from around the weekend. Ricky Tiedemann, it sounds, anytime you hear the word Ulnar, it's never that good, but it sounds like he's been dealing with a nerve issue, and as of Friday, they were hoping he'd be back to pitching in 7 to 10 days, so that's not that bad. Mason, Landon Moraitis, we're still waiting results from the MRI, and then Scott Mitchell of TSM was reporting that Brandon Barriera, the number one pick from a couple years ago, is headed for elbow surgery, whether that's Tommy John or internal brace procedure, still TBD or something else altogether, but Scott Mitchell was reporting that he is headed for surgery. So none of those guys, except for maybe Tiedemann, were really on the 2024 radar anyway, but even the guys to get excited about for later are not there anymore.
It's tough, and that's pitching for you, right? We'll see what happens with Tiedemann. I think at this point, it's really hard to count on him giving you anything, and this is a guy who only threw 62 innings last year, including the fall league. He needed this year as a developmental year. Set aside the majors, he needed to develop. So that's we're seeing fewer of those chances already.
One other note on the pitching staff and how the bullpen is: the Blue Jays are off on Thursday and then again next Monday. So they do have a 2 off day over 5 day stretch. They're also off the following Thursday, so they have 3 off days over 8 days. So not only is that nice for your bullpen, but if you're thinking about Yariel Rodriguez and a way to get him, you know, on a 5 day rest, even a 6 day rest, have your Gausman, your Bassett, your Berríos go on normal rest around the off day, we could see some rotation juggling coming out of this Kansas City series.
And even if you keep them on turn, then you would still have extra days for Yariel, right?
Yeah.
So I think that could work.
Okay, so we'll see that. So this has been a fairly negative show so far because the Jays had lost 5 in a row until yesterday and they can't score any runs. Let's goof around a little bit to end it. So tonight is Danny Jansen night down at the ballpark. You can get those Danny Jansen spectacles that Emily Agard was showing off on the broadcast all weekend if you're down at the park. It's a pretty good giveaway, I think, even though, like, a guy having glasses is not all that unique a thing. Like, guys wear glasses. Right. I guess we couldn't do the, like, fake Danny Jansen mustache goatee because he keeps changing up the look.
Yeah, exactly.
The Jays have a pretty good history of fun little giveaways like this. Do you have a favorite from over the years?
Yeah, I'll throw one out there. As you may know, my favorite baseball clothing item is the short-sleeved hoodie, or better still, the sleeveless hoodie.
Yes.
I think that's peak baseball for some reason.
It's the Pete Walker. Yeah. It's like, I've got guns, I'm around the team, and I still work out, and I want people to know it.
Right. And Pete has sleeves on his, to be fair. Yeah. But yeah, the short sleeve look is phenomenal. And they had a giveaway of that. I want to say it was 3-4 years. It must have been 3 years ago, because 4 years ago was the pandemic. But yeah, it was a good one. And
Was it for a particular player, or was it just the giveaway?
I think it was Bo and Vlad on it. And it just stands out. I think a good giveaway, in my opinion, should be something that you can't just go to the team store and get.
Right.
Or something that you can't just go, you know, down to a department store and get, or order off Amazon. Like, there should be a kind of hard to obtain aspect of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why my favorite of all time is something you can't get anywhere. Maybe you could find it on eBay, but I doubt you'd even be able to do that. The Gustavo Chassin cologne.
Right.
That is a disgusting giveaway. It's a bad idea, but it is very, very funny that the team gave away a small vial of Gustavo Chassin cologne. I believe that was in 2006. 2005 was like his big breakout year where he threw like 200 innings for them. So I think it was 2006 they did it.
That's a phenomenal giveaway.
Yeah. That's a very baseball giveaway.
I wonder what it smells like now.
I can't imagine it smelled good then. But yeah, probably not very good now. Another note, semi-related to giveaways and things like that. We're getting proper jerseys back. Jeff Passan of ESPN reported yesterday that Nike has finally relented and been like, yes, we will make new jerseys and we will undo the unnecessary tweaking. The Jays also, you had tweeted out, I think, about the baby blues. They finally arrived.
Yeah, exactly. So they wore them yesterday, and they were just delayed. So you would think that, you know, if your client is Major League Baseball, you would get them the product they've ordered for opening day, but evidently not, because the Blue Jays waited a full month, and it was just the traditional uniforms. They didn't have those baby blues. So yeah, now those are back in the mix. And later, I guess it's about a month from now, we'll see the Jays City Connects. I wonder.
Yes,
my hopes are not
high.
Yeah, end of May. I'm expecting to be disappointed, but we'll see what they look like.
Yeah,
it should be a good uniform, but I don't, you know, we'll see.
There are a lot of good things you could do with the history of the Blue Jays with the city of Toronto. There are a lot of, if you look at the City Connect jerseys around baseball, there are a lot of ways you could flop this as well. So that's tough. Jays, if you're listening, debut them on this show like the Raptors did with their new jerseys.
You're offering to wear them?
I'm offering to like at least have it hanging there and show it off or whatever. I'm not much of a, I don't think anyone needs to see me in a sports uniform. But the Raptors hooked us up when they were releasing the new ones this year.
Really?
Raptors 905 had some Lunar New Year jerseys that we got to bring on the show and show off. J-Sock, let's come on.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We could do it. Debut it right here. Ali Khan, if you're listening, help me out. So related to the Jays offense struggling, one of the better offenses in baseball of late has been the Minnesota Twins. Don't know if you've seen what they're doing for a home run celebration.
I saw the Rocco Baldelli quote. I guess it involves a sausage, but that's all
I know.
So
they have a large piece of cured meat that Ryan Jeffers just chucks it, like as you're jogging back to the dugout, you get a sausage chucked at you. It's still wrapped, so it's not like that unhygienic. It's obviously a very weird thing. If anyone, I would have thought the Brewers would do this. I don't know. The Jays went from being like the home run jacket team to the only team without anything like that.
Yeah.
Any cured, I know you're not a meat guy, but any sort of food that you think you could get the Jays going?
Oh my goodness. That's a little gross. I gotta admit, just a piece of meat sitting there in the dugout. And what happens when it gets hot too? Like, is that going to,
Rocco Baldelli said it hasn't been refrigerated for like a week.
Well, I'll let the Twins figure that out. But yeah, as far as, you know, celebratory, it's, I always think that it really is up to the players. And, the players have their own culture and their own sort of, you know, room there to figure that out. If they want to do that, go for it. I don't necessarily need to, you know, have a say in that or have an opinion on that. But it can be entertaining. It can be highly entertaining.
Yeah.
And I do find it interesting that the Blue Jays have chosen not to do that.
Yeah. Just keep it hygienic if you do it, Blue Jays. That's all. Don't have a room temp piece of meat
Seems a little suspect.
Yeah. Although I guess like jerky and stuff like that can be kept room temperature. What do I know? Okay. So I mentioned earlier that the Blue Jays have had a streak before of 20 games where they did not score six runs. That happened in 2008. That was a Blue Jays team that when I mentioned the 2008 Blue Jays, you like just rattled off their entire pitching staff without me even asking you. They finished 86-76. To me, they're the Pythag team. Like they are the proof that Pythagoras didn't know ball. Because that was a team that, based on their Pythagorean win-loss record, should have won 93 games. They only won 86. Pythag obviously didn't know what he was talking about. It's a weird team. They were number one in baseball in run prevention, in runs allowed per game. They were also 13th in the American League, or 11th in the American League, rather, in scoring runs. So if that sounds familiar to you about how a team wins games, it's probably because it sounds a lot like this year's Blue Jays team. They went 8-12 over their 20-game stretch. The Jays went 10-10 during this current 20-game stretch without that. So they had, so OPS plus is on-base plus slugging adjusted to league average. They had five regulars, one part-time player, and one short-time player who were at least league average.
For the full season?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But the team high was just 123, Vernon Wells. So that is not a very good. There are only five times in franchise history where the team's best hitter has hit worse than that.
Wow.
2018 and 2019 were two of them, obviously.
Right. Smoke and someone else, probably.
Yeah, there was a Smoke one. Actually, Smoke was one. Yeah, so Smoke was 122.
Yeah.
Led the team. And then there was one year where, like, there were a couple guys who beat, but, like, nobody qualified. It was, like Cavan had, like, a 108, and that was one of the best marks on the team. It was bleak. So that 2008 year, can you name the guys who were league average at the plate?
Let's see. Okay, so you said Vernon's number one.
Yeah.
So 2008, I want to say, so this is not my guess. I want to say that Aaron Hill and Adam Lind had their big years in 2009. So I'm not going to guess them right now.
So I will say Adam Lind did have a league average season, but he was like one of the part-time players that I mentioned. He only played 85 games.
Okay. So I'll say Marco Scudero.
Nope.
Okay. I'll say Lyle Overbay.
Yes.
Okay. Alex Rios.
Yes.
Is Greg Zahn on that team?
I don't know if he's on the team, but he was not one of the, he was the backup catcher.
Okay.
He was not one of the guys.
All right. Give me a position.
Third base, recently went in the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
big hit.
Scott Rowland.
Yeah. Scott Rowland was one. There was one part-time player who got called up from the minors, friend of the show. You might say JP Ricciardi did not do him any favors with the up, down early in his career. Corner outfielder.
Okay.
Looks kind of like Addison Barger.
Okay. Looks kind of, I'm sure a lot of listeners have this one right now. Yeah. Tell me.
Travis Snyder.
Oh, nice.
And then there's one more. And this is the one that I thought you would throw. He played 109 games. He had an OPS plus of 105, playing primarily at second base. He almost hit 300 that year.
Okay, and it's not Aaron Hill.
It's not Aaron Hill.
2008 Blue Jays, second base, not Scudero, not Aaron Hill. David Eckstein?
Joe Inglet.
Joe Inglet. Wow.
Joe Inglet had a 762 OPS for an entire season and played almost every position on the diamond.
That's got to be his career year.
Oh, it was the only year he got real playing time in his entire career. Yeah,
wow.
No, the next year he was like back into a pinch hit and defensive replacement.
He's like
a
John Birdie. That's
Yeah. Although he stole nine bases that year.
Right.
So it wasn't
John Birdie
even,
without the speed.
Yeah, which is not a major league player for a lot of teams. So that's how bleak it can get.
Wow. Those are some good pulls.
This is a team that, yeah, right now, I do this. One, because it's always fun to remember those old teams.
Yes.
But also, like, those are the full season numbers for a team that won 86 games and had the run differential of a 93-win team.
Yeah.
The baseball offensive environment is in the mud right now. As negative as we are about the offense right now, given how good the pitching and defense are, I think the thought I'm still left with is it's not positive, but rather than this team is so bad, it's always going to be like this, they don't have to be that good offensively for this to get back to being a solid team.
Right. It's still wild when you consider that 2021, they were one of the best offensive teams in baseball. Now they're one of the worst. I think you said 27th in baseball and runs scored off the top. So 27th in baseball, regardless of the environment, that's showing you that against the teams they're competing with, it's not happening. But hey, if they get to 16th or 14th with this pitching staff, that can be enough.
Maybe tonight is the night against Jonathan Bolin and the Kansas City Royals. First of three, it's 7:07 down at Rogers Center. Ben Schulman, Joe Siddle, Arden Zwelling on the TV call. Eric Smith and Chris LaRue on radio. And then Jamie and Caleb have Blue Jays Central for you. I've been Blake Murphy for Jays Talk Plus. Ben Nicholson-Smith, thanks so much for taking the time out, buddy.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you to Ben Nicholson-Smith, to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back tomorrow at 11. Blair and Barker have you, as usual, 2 to 4, and then for Jays Talk post-game. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the game tonight.